Hey everybody, what's going on? I'm Rob Sestrino, back again to talk with you about the week's most interesting movie of July 2020 here on News AF.
If a story is buzzing like it's on crystal meth, it's about to be News AF. If the same old news makes you bored to death, it's time for some News AF. Actual, factual news.
Yes, that's right. Welcome back to this News AF special here today, where we are going to be talking about the favorite film of all time of one of the members of our panel. Here,
I would say probably all three now.
All three of us now here. Yeah. A man who could probably throw a five-sided glaive with no problem. Tyson Apostle. Tyson, how are you?
I'm awesome, dude. And before we really get into it here, is glaive a real word? Is glaive a
made
is that a real word, or is that just a made up word for the film? The glaive. Well,
supposedly Shakespeare made up a bunch of words for the English language, and now it seems like Kroll has too.
The writer of Kroll has also made up a bunch of words. I mean, it sounds fitting. It's just like, I don't know if that was a word before, if that was something they come up with.
Someone said blade, drunk, blade, and the guy heard glaive. He's like, perfect.
That is perfect. Yeah,
G-L-A-I-V-E is the MacGuffin of the film Kroll, which is a favorite of Danny Bryson, who is the person who brings us all together here today for this epic retelling of Kroll.
Fireside chat.
A fireside chat.
Kroll was a movie of my youth. My brother put it this way. He said that growing up, we only had five or six video cassettes that we could watch. Mm-hmm. And one of those was Kroll. And so it got used and watched constantly. And I got to say, when I rewatched Kroll a couple days ago, it's held up. It got even better with age.
It really has.
That's what we're here to talk about today. And now, if you haven't seen Kroll, don't worry. It's not easy to find. It is on Amazon Prime, but I had to pay $2.99 to watch it in standard def. I'm wondering if I should have held out and gone for the $3.99 HD rental.
I bought it in HD for like $12.99.
Wow.
I regret that because I don't foresee myself watching it again. But maybe if Danny ever visits, we can sit down and have another Kroll watch party. Also, Rob, me and you had never heard of this.
I never heard of it, never saw it.
Until Danny.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that I know why. It's because Danny has older brothers.
Yes.
I have an older sister. So
I'm
like
the oldest. Yeah.
So like I learned of like the, I can't even remember the band name, the something sisters.
The Pointer Sisters.
Not the Pointer Sisters. Crocodile something or other. Not the Crocodile Sisters. They sang, they were like 90s for sure.
Yeah.
And so I heard like all of these like 90s girl groups, and that was like what my sibling did for me. Mm-hmm. And so Danny got like all this dope like films.
Have you been good friends with Taj for all these years?
Yes.
Yeah.
So for me, it was funny because when I bought the video, or sorry, rented it, I looked at the customers who watched this also watch. And what I saw in the suggestions are all the videos of my youth. So Flash Gordon,
yes.
Willow, Never Ending Story, Conan the Destroyer, I wasn't allowed to watch, but I did see. Pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And it just goes on and on. All these videos that I watched when I was a kid, and they all fit in the Kroll family.
Flash Gordon, I feel like I knew better than this. I feel like my dad watched Flash Gordon. I remember that movie being on when I was a kid. But Kroll was never on in my house, and it was today. And I have to say, Danny, my kids were very into it. My kids were very much that the formula held, because both of my sons like, Dad, what is this? What's happening? It really appealed to.
Wow. I should show it to Bergen then.
No, I felt like I I'm glad my kids didn't watch it. There are one or two scenes where I thought, how did I handle this as
a
child?
They were asking a lot of questions.
Like what part?
So one part that when it started to happen, I'm like, oh my gosh, I remember this. And it's when the blind old man who's guiding them to the Emerald Castle,
yes,
so that they can find out where the Black Fortress is going to be the following day. The old man sitting there, he needs to be guided. He's blind and everybody's off fighting. Mm-hmm. And from behind him comes an identical blind man. Looks just like him.
Yeah.
And he creeps up to the actual blind wizard,
mm-hmm,
and he puts his hands around his necks and his fingernails start to grow, and you don't even know who's making what noise. Like, I can't tell if the one guy is having like this orgasmic experience as he kills, mm-hmm, the original blind wizard,
yeah,
but they're both like, ah, ah, ah. And it was just that I remembered that part that was seared into my mind. And when that happened, I was transported back to 1983.
So, back to the day before you found that Playboy porn stash in your,
in our brand new house hidden in the rocks. We'll never forget the images I saw.
Okay.
You found a Playboy when you were 5 years old.
Eight. Okay. Eight, seven or eight.
It's later on.
Yeah.
It's in the movie theater. Yeah. Okay.
And then, okay, what was the other moment besides that one?
Oh, there were actually a couple moments. The Cyclops.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd completely forgotten about the Cyclops. And when he chucks his trident,
mm-hmm, yeah,
across, yeah, to save, you know, the Earl or whatever his name is, the guy, the, yeah, clown. You know who I'm talking about?
Yes.
Yeah. That part, I'm like, oh, I remember seeing that Cyclops going, whoa, dude. And same reaction this time. There were a bunch of parts like that. When they got caught in the quicksand.
Yeah.
That also stuck with me because I remember looking at the material of the quicksand getting on their faces. And I'm like, what is that? What is that made out of? Turns out that it's some kind of cork that they use. I was reading about it. Yeah, cork sand or broken up cork. Yeah, I don't know what it is.
Terrifying.
Dude, and quicksand was one of the most horrific, terrifying, scary things as a child of our day, where, mm-hmm, it was just like every cartoon, everything, anybody in peril, they came into some fucking quicksand, dude.
Yeah.
And there was, you were like, no, how?
A comedian.
In your mind, going to bed.
Yes.
Yeah, in your mind, going to bed, you're like, spread it all out. Yeah, it's John Mulaney talks about
it. John Mulaney does a bit on it, and it's so true.
Yeah.
Like quicksand was definitely the top five things you were worried about,
mm-hmm,
as a
exactly.
child.
Okay. So last
Let's
week,
get into it.
We talked about how the Quibi, the geniuses over at Quibi have remade the Princess Bride. And even my son Dominic's like, Dad, is this movie like the Princess Bride? And it's like, yeah, it kind of is. What I was thinking today is as that we have seen Crawl, especially Danny has lived Crawl all of these years. Many of our listeners are not familiar with it, that basically we could tell the story of Crawl so that people are able to experience the magic of Crawl by this podcast, and we can all give our takes, but we'll tell the chronological story of Crawl here in this podcast. Does that sound good?
Yeah,
it sounds like something.
Something. Okay.
Yeah, something, it is something for sure. And I definitely have a few moments picked out of the film and one of my all-time favorite moments. But we'll let Danny get into it, right?
Yeah, and we'll let our listeners, if they have questions or comments along the way of that, hey, wait, I don't understand, wait, what's happening, then we can fill in the blanks a little bit more so that people can all hear the legend of Crawl.
Okay, we ready?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay,
we're ready.
All right.
Transport yourself if you can to, mm-hmm, another time and place, a planet far
is this
away,
the future or the past?
That's it's one of those movies where it's like medieval but in space with magic, but with futuristic shit as well. And it's like, you don't know. Like when I first started, I was like, oh, what is this going to be? Is this going to be in the future? Is it going to be just like a different time? Is it, mm-hmm, going to be like a different? And
they just threw everything against the wall to see what would stick.
They're
like, dude, all this stuff is pretty popular right now. Let's just throw it all out there. See what we can get.
Yeah, the battles are like swords, but then the guys come in with guns and lasers, and you're just like, why are you using the swords when everybody has a laser gun too? You know,
mm-hmm,
get out of there. And so I was honestly, right as we started, I was like, okay, they did use all of it. It's futuristic, but it's also medieval.
It takes place on the planet Krull, by the way.
Okay.
So Krull is the name of the planet.
Yeah.
And the planet is being invaded by the Beast and his army of Slayers, which the costume of the Slayers is pretty dope. I have to say that I always liked the look of the Slayers. And
they're better than Stormtroopers, for sure.
For sure. They look fancy. Everyone actually has really nice body contouring armor. Like, it really makes everyone look super cut.
The Slayers seem to move very slow, though, in their, like, squiddy type.
But they have lasers.
Because the Beast has an endless supply of Slayers, would be my guess. Mm-hmm. And so for him, the numbers don't matter. He doesn't care how many die. It's relentless. That's the whole idea. If you notice, is that you can kill a lot of Slayers, but they just keep coming. Mm-hmm. And you can't stop the wave of Slayers.
Like Stormtroopers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would say they're a little bit more methodical. They're like a mix between a Stormtrooper and a Terminator. Okay. And that they just keep going. And their lives don't matter to the Beast.
Yeah. Obviously. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just throws them.
And the Slayers do have most of the laser guns.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Now, laser guns is a bit of a stretch, because what they have is a weapon that can shoot one laser and then they have to turn it around after shooting the laser and now use it as a sword. So each Slayer can deploy one laser shot.
Was that described in the movie, or you just noticed that?
I noticed that. I'm like, that is a really stupid technology.
Is it sort of like an old style, like musket? Do they need to like load the laser?
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought.
Wait for it to charge.
Shot. Yeah, then you got to put it back like, in the charger.
Yeah, in ancient warfare, you discharge your airborne weapons and then, you know, pull out your swords and... You know, you chuck your spear. That's what it's like. You would throw your spear, and then you would take out your sword and charge.
Okay. Kay. All right.
Cool.
All right?
Yep.
Now, there is a prophecy, and much like Star Wars, this opens up with a wise old man describing a prophecy where two people are going to get married, and they're going to have a baby, and that baby's going to rule the galaxy.
But you don't think that they copied Star Wars at all anywhere?
No, no. But they're definitely riding the Star Wars wave on this one. Now, the problem I see this is like...
every step of this film's development, there with some guy in just trying to sell to executives, this is going to be the next Star Wars.
Totally.
There's going to be sequels, action figures. This is going to be it. We're going to be rich.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, totally.
All the actors did it for free, but they got merchandising percentages.
And there was a prophecy, though, that one day a young upstart actor from this film would eventually be in Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Okay. Keep going, Danny.
All right, so... I don't know what it is with directors, but the movie basically opens with about 15 minutes of horse riding through the Italian countryside. Lord of the Rings suffered from the same kind of editing, editing.
This was back at a time where you could do that, and that was the style of film. There was a lot of moments in this movie where it was just like when they ride the horses all the way across the entire planet overnight, and they're like laser horses. Fire horses.
Yeah.
Those things. Also,
that's true.
You watch the fire horses move across the planet for like 35 minutes. So combined...
But we're not to that part yet. Let's just talk about the opening horse scenes. And what we're seeing is that they're trying to get a prince to marry a princess.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
So they're trying to get Prince Calwyn to Princess Lyssa.
And the princess and prince are all in on this marriage, but the parents are not.
Because they're two warring states.
Yes. Not
they
Princess
don't like
Leia
each other.
Also. Princess Lyssa.
No. Princess Lyssa.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I actually thought the princess's father, the king, had a great line where he said, "Warriors don't make great husbands."
Mm-hmm.
And that'll come up later.
Mm-hmm. Because he proves everybody wrong.
Yeah, exactly. That's foreshadowing exactly what's going to happen in this film, where not only is Calwyn the full package, and we get to see quite a bit of his package because he is wearing pretty tight pants.
The pants are so tight. I noticed those.
Dude.
Like three quarters of the way through, I'm like, wow, those pants are painted on.
When he was doing the rock climbing in boots the pants, that's what I was like, God damn those
guys.
Pants,
we're getting ahead of it. Let's get people to the rock climbing and the tight pants, okay? Because that's not that far in
the
future.
His pants are literally made out of like flex tape that if you have like a hole in something.
And I'm like there's no way. There's no way.
Flex tape on there.
Danny would do any rock climbing in these dress boots that this man is wearing.
No way. Okay, let's get to that part. Okay, we're jumping ahead.
But at that point, let me tell you, at that point, I realized they didn't hire an actor for the lead role. They hired a rock climber who, that's all their whole thing was like, he's got to be able to scale a mountain in weird boots. And if he can do that, he's perfect for the part. And that's how I think they found
him. He didn't do that climbing. When I was watching that, I'm like, dude, I do that kind of editing all the time.
Okay,
where it's like you're just over a grassy, flower-filled ledge, and it's like they just cut that out to make it look like you're 10,000 feet up.
Yeah, fine.
By the way, all right. The lead of Krull, Ken Marshall, did not go on to have much success after this real.
Yeah, because this was his mic drop.
Yeah,
this was his mic drop.
He put his stamp on history.
Yeah.
Listen, when that guy came on, I was like, Rachel, guess who that guy is? Because I knew Liam Neeson was in this film. And she's like, who? And I was like, that I think is Liam Neeson. And she's like, that doesn't look like him. I was like, not really, but it also doesn't not look like I could maybe. And then Liam Neeson came on. I was like, oh, never mind. That guy's not Liam Neeson. That guy that looks exactly like Liam Neeson with a mullet is Liam Neeson.
Yeah.
So I had mistaken there. But also I was like, why did they choose the most boring dude to be the lead of when you watch that and the king of the prince is like, he's up to no good. He's a warrior. And then he comes and he's like, hey, everybody, I'm super nice. And you're like, that guy's not a warrior. He like makes a perfect husband. Like, you know that from the get go that he's a super sweetheart.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
No,
that's one interpretation.
You don't think so?
Tyson, can I finish telling the story?
Finish.
We want people to have an idea of what takes place in this movie. All right.
You tell the story, then I'll pick it apart.
We want the full Prince Calwyn.
Okay.
If I say these names wrong, because some of them, when you look at them spelled out, look incredibly complicated.
They rarely like the say prophet. His name, the prince.
Yeah. But the prophet guy, Ynir.
Mm-hmm.
Ynir.
Yeah.
Okay.
Man.
So let me go on. So anyway, the prince and the princess meet. It took a lot of lives to get the prince there, right? They started off with a group of 300, but the slayers picked them off, ended up with like 10 people getting to the castle. But no big deal. No sweat off the prince's back. They're still going to have a marriage. And his bride is looking fresh and ripe. So the day comes, which happens to be the very next day after the guy gets in.
And wait,
I think he changes his clothes.
This castle, you can ride horses inside this castle, right? I noticed
that
the horses were going
by
up and down the stairs and just like wherever.
The minute you see the castle, you begin to appreciate that this is going to be a movie of sets, mm-hmm. big, large sets.
Yes.
The castle is a giant set, and that sets the tone for the entire movie. It is just huge. Sets,
yeah.
Which I found pretty amazing. So anyway, yes, you can ride your horse right into the castle. No big deal.
Yeah. Indoors. If you have an indoor horse, you can definitely ride around that castle.
They're going to get married because they're going to give birth to the son who rules the galaxy. And the thing is, like, he's going to rule the galaxy from a world that still rides horses and fights with swords, which I didn't understand, mm-hmm. but whatever.
But so, also has lasers.
No, they don't have lasers. The people of Krull do not have
their
lasers.
Their swords do appear to have some sort of an electrical charge, though, when they...
No, they do have red charge.
No, they don't. They have a charge every time they strike Slayer armor.
Oh.
I think that is them. That's
how
what
are
I
you
got
seeing this so deeply, Danny? It's crazy. You're like on a different level than us.
I saw this with like 10-year-old eyes. So.
Okay.
Anyway, the marriage is taking place. They're about to exchange vows, which requires them to exchange fire.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of their vow. The princess, she possessed the ability to create fire in her hand out of water. Mm-hmm. And he's supposed to take that fire. And right as he's about to take her fire, the slayers show up. Big party crashers, mm-hmm. big wet blankets. And they break into the castle. And the first thing you notice is that for being the two most powerful kingdoms on the planet, they really suck at fighting.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the slayers are coming in almost unopposed. They're walking up walls. They're killing what you would consider to be the king's guard, the greatest fighters in the kingdom, at whim. Like almost no restraint.
Yeah. I kind of thought when I saw this that they only did one take on pretty much all the fights.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure.
They didn't retake any of those. They were like, good enough.
Got
next.
It. Okay.
Yep.
Now, they do show a Slayer getting killed, which is important because you instantly realize that Slayers are not humans. They appear to be human form. But when you kill one, something like an alien comes out of the face. And it's always the face mask that breaks and the alien spills out and burrows into the ground. So it's like human form, but worm operated. Human form.
Yeah.
So that's what a Slayer is. A Slayer is not, it's not human.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, the princess gets taken. The prince is, you think, dead. Big shocker.
Thought he was dead.
Not dead. The prophet, the man whose voice you heard at the beginning of the film, Ynir, shows up to heal the wounded prince.
He puts some healing salve on the laser wound that he had in his shoulder.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, which was also a scene I remembered. I don't know why it made such an impression. Maybe I thought that's really gross. But yeah, he creates a paste and puts it on the wound. And that stuck with me as a child. I was now, like, I don't think that's right.
This is what I thought. The rest of the movie, the prince had a hole in his shoulder of his costume where he got shot. And I was like, a lot of movies wouldn't do that. That hole would be gone at some point. But this was so realistic. And he wore his clothes for however many days that hole always maintained.
Now, describing the rest of the movie from here on is easy. The Prince Calwyn has to do two things. He has to acquire a weapon of untold power, the glaive.
Mm-hmm.
And he also has to find the Black Fortress. Now, the Black Fortress changes its position, which is super smart. Right?
Dude.
Every day or every other day. I couldn't figure out. So he has to do those two things. He also has to assemble a ragtag group of fighters, which is where Liam Neeson comes in. And so those are his three quests.
That part just kind of happens. He kind of.
He goes in and they find him. He's about to get ransacked by these bandits. And he gives the most unmoving speech I've ever heard my life. And all of them decide to drop what they're doing as bandits, printing that cash and to follow him into battle.
No, they don't drop what they're doing because of his speech. I think they drop what they're doing because he possesses a key that only the king has. And he shows that he really is the king. That if you look at it, that's the turning point for them is like, oh, this guy, instead of just being some crazy dude talking about going to the Black Fortress, this is the king. So these guys still have some crumb of devotion to their king and kingdom. And I think that's what turns them to be his followers.
Okay. So we hear a tale of a weapon, Danny.
The glaive.
Tell us more about the glaive.
So the glaive, you don't choose the glaive. The glaive chooses you.
Oh, wow. We've been in positions like this before, Sword in the Stone-esque.
Yes, exactly. King Arthur. Story of King Arthur. So the prophet guy, Ynir, tells Calwyn, yeah, you can defeat the beast, but you're going to need a weapon, special weapon. And of course, these weapons are never easy to get to. He's got to spend 15 to 20 minutes of edits climbing the Dolomites.
Rock climbing.
He would have, back then, no ropes.
Are they filming in Italy in the Dolomites? Is that what
I looked it up. That's where they're filming in Italy.
Wow.
So, again, very generous edits that just go on and on, much like the horse riding.
Yeah.
And I love those edits. I thought the mountain looked awesome, but man, it went on for a long time.
There's avalanches.
Oh, yeah. Rockfall, which was an awesome part. Yeah. And eventually, he reaches the cave, because that's where you keep secret
weapons.
But,
I mean, I think the reason they had to go so long with this edit was because they didn't have anything for after this. They were like, the glaive has to be hard to get to. And they're like, so what does he have to do? And they're like, he has to rock climb up there and then walk in that hole. And they're like, that's not a lot of obstacles to get the most important weapon. Like,
okay,
any
man that's
could
true.
Get that. And they're like, okay, let's just show him rock climbing for like
forever.
A really long time.
Yeah. It's super hard. He gets super sweaty.
Yeah.
Anyway,
and he does it in boots, regular like leather-soled dance boots.
Yep.
And then, and those tight
pants. The tightest pants.
Back then, I don't even know if they had Lycra, so those were probably non-stretch.
Dude, sheer muscle strength brought those up every time. Eventually, he gets to the cave. And, of course, the glaive is hidden It's under about 6 to 8 inches of lava.
We think it's lava.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's lava.
It's lava?
That is lava.
Okay, it was stated as being lava.
And the thing that blows my mind is obviously he loves the princess so much Lissa. That he doesn't even hesitate to put his hand in lava to get the glaive.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care. Like, Liz, let's say to save Liz from the beast, I climb up there. Cool. Got to go to a cool location. And then I'm looking at the glaive and it's under 8 inches of lava. I'm going to be like, I mean, the beast can travel space and time. Maybe not such a bad alternative to me in my dirty horse run kingdom, because reaching your hand into lava, that really stuck with me too, that scene.
Maybe, yeah, I like how he didn't try. He didn't even try a stick or like his sword or anything.
Which is what I would have done.
Yeah.
I would have like poked a stick in there and be like, is that,
And also, how are you so sure it's lava when lava isn't transparent like that? You can't look down through 8 inches of lava and see it wave.
It is bubbling, smoking lava.
Okay, fine.
It is lava. That's what they wanted us to think. It is lava.
I know that. So he reaches his hand in and his hand starts on fire for a second. And I'm like,
lava.
Bone. He's going to have bone hand when he pulls it out, but it's going to be cool. And I really was hoping that he pulls it out and he has skeleton what are those old Greek mythology movies where the skeletons are like...
Oh, that's another great movie from my youth, Jason and the Argonauts.
Yes. So I thought he was going to have like Jason and the Argonauts hand, skeleton hand, but he pulled it out and...
flesh is there because
flesh
of love.
Flesh is there and the glaive, because he was chosen, right? That's why his flesh chose is still him. There.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And then the glaive is encased and entombed in... hard, crusty. Crusted lava.
Yeah, it looked like breaded fried chicken nuggets.
Yeah,
the breading falls off and reveals the shining, bejeweled glaive, which then five blades pop out.
Boom.
Super freaking dangerous. Like, how did he know to hold it? I would have.
Yeah, that's what I was like. I was like, is he holding it the right way or is he going to get jammed by a blade? He did it. But that's part of like the, he was chosen.
Being
like,
called. Yeah. I would have held it and taken a blade right through the palm and then dropped the glaive back into the lava.
Yeah, where it would have been entombed again in lava, encrusted, in breaded charcoal, and then game over. You know?
I have that part up right now where he's definitely holding it where he will be impaled when he first takes it out. But then at the point when the blades pop out of this starfish, he is holding it in a way that he will not be impaled. So that he managed to, in the just right before the blades come out, he adjusted his hand.
Now he's got this awesome weapon. He runs down the mountain in seemingly insane times, like FKT all over the place. Mm-hmm. Gets down to Ynir, and he's like so excited to show Ynir, look, I got it. He's about to chuck it. And Ynir tells him, dude, don't. You can't just throw this thing around.
Yeah.
It'll tell you when you're supposed to use it. So now he's got this stellar weapon, and for the rest of the movie, he never uses it.
They tell him, hey, they're like, only use it when it's the appropriate time.
But
I know, but it's like, come on.
The second you see him use it, you're like, this movie could have been over in 30 seconds after he gets the glaive. And maybe he didn't even understand the full power of the glaive, but the second he pulls it out, and then when he pulls it out, he's allowed to use it willy-nilly on every single thing that he can.
Oh, and instantly, and we'll get to this, he pulls it out, uses it, and instantly he can't get it back. That's the other thing. It's like, dude, he
loses it.
That's why we can't have nice things. That's why you can't have the glaive, because the glaive chose an idiot who, you know, used it and in 5 minutes couldn't get it back.
Yeah. So, this guy, so he gets the glaive, he goes down, they tell him that, and so he stashes it on his person, and then they, hike back down the mountain, and what happens next, Danny?
So, well, every movie needs comedic relief, kind of like C-3PO.
Mm-hmm.
He's the brass one, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So they came up with their own, and they bump into a magician in this forest in some weird, not important, like, branch of the story.
Yeah.
They meet the magician Ergo the Magnificent. Ergo the Magnificent.
Yes.
And at first, he's not going to join them because he thinks they're crazy. But as he wanders away from these two, he stumbles across a Cyclops in the forest, turns around, runs back, and decides to join their merry band.
But he doesn't tell the people what he sees in the
forest. Which is weird, because I'd be like, dude, I just saw a freaking Cyclops. I'm coming with you.
Yeah.
He doesn't say that. He just runs and just assumes that Prince Caldwin will let him ride on the horse with him.
Mm-hmm.
Gets on the back of the horse with the prince. And I'm like, dude, I'd be like, dude, get off my horse. Like, yeah. That seems very intimate for people who have only known each other.
Well, yeah, but not on the planet of Kroll, and that's where...
You're right. They might have different customs.
He's a hill person that he can do some sort of magic, but he can only do... His magic can't harm other people. Is that right, Tyson?
It's only to himself. Yeah. Like, he'll try to change somebody into something, but he always ends up changing himself into that thing.
Yes.
Oh, by the way, he does change himself in his meeting with the prince. He changes himself into a goose.
A goose.
And the special effects are out of this world.
They really are pretty incredible.
Yeah.
He also, throughout the movie, he changes himself into a puppy. What else does he do?
Tiger.
Tiger. Is it just those three?
I think so.
Yeah.
Okay. So he does that. And my favorite part comes up a little bit later. We'll talk about it in a second, but it does include the Cyclops.
And can I add about this actor? He's been in like a million things, but I think that what I most notably recognize him from, that in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, he plays Charlie Bucket's teacher. And he is the person who he's like teaching class, but all he can do is like do experiments and then talk about things. And he's like, so say how many Wonka bars did you eat? And Charlie Bucket is like, two. He's like, okay, 200. Is that? And he's like, no, only two. Like, why? I can't figure out two. So it's the same.
I do remember that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah. He's an excellent actor.
Yes.
I think his talents were underused.
They really were.
Ergo the Magnificent.
He reminded me of Steve Coogan or whatever that guy's name is.
Gutenberg?
Yeah. No, Coogan.
Wow.
Steve Coogan, yeah.
Yeah.
So, now they've got Ergo, and they've got a group of three. And again, now they're touring the countryside. Lots of countryside horse riding. And just as they go through a tight grouping of rocks, which is a perfect ambush spot, right?
The magician mentions.
Yeah.
And
okay, go on, Tyson.
Well, and the leader guy, the old wizardy dude, was like, I know a shortcut that will cut 5 days off our journey. We just have to walk through this elaborate set, which is obviously an elaborate set.
Another huge set.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay, go on.
And as they're cutting through the shortcut, which a shortcut in bandit country, always a bad idea.
Mm-hmm. Always. Like, but you always take it because it's short.
Yeah, it could shave off some time.
5 days.
But it always leads to attack. Mm-hmm. And that's what happens. An ambush takes place. And these people aren't really committed to a life of banditry because they're easily swayed to join the group. And this is where a young, handsome Liam Neeson makes his appearance as well.
Yeah.
He's part of this group of bandits who now become the Prince's army.
Yeah. We find out that the Liam Neeson character later on in the film is like the womanizer of the
group. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, seven wives.
Yeah,
that's a wife in every...
That's his role in this group of bandits.
So they go... Now, again, we have countryside travel. They've joined the group. They have to find the Black Castle, the Black Fortress. To get the Black Fortress, remember, it changes places. They have to contact someone called... the Emerald Seer, something like that. The Seer.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where they're headed. And of course, they get hungry, they get tired. So they stop for a time near one of Liam's wives.
Mm-hmm.
And she brings them all food and apparently tons of prostitutes too, to mm-hmm. the group. One of them, though, is under the sway of the beast. No, you don't know this
at
the time.
But we didn't. Did we already get to the wizard part?
I think the wizard part, is that after this? I think that the seer is after this.
We skipped ahead a little bit.
The seer's before.
We haven't introduced the Cyclops yet.
Oh.
The seer and the Cyclops.
Yeah.
Okay, I must be getting them mixed up.
So you go into the seer, they go into the rock. They just step through a rock.
That's right. The green emerald thing opens up, and for some reason, these people always just run headfirst into just magical openings.
Yeah.
And they're transported to where the seer lives. The Emerald Seer.
Yeah.
And they're going to try and get him to tell them where the Black Fortress will be appearing in the next day or two. And so they peer into a spinning, very nice special effects once again, a spinning chunk of emerald rock. But the beast isn't going to allow that. So he blocks the seer's view. And the seer says, we have to go to, I believe it's called like the Emerald Castle or something like that, where there's so much emerald that the beast can't block the emerald seer from looking and finding out where the Black Fortress is going to be. Yeah. So now the group consists of the bandits, Ergo, the prince, Anir, and now the seer and his apprentice, who really quickly the magician Ergo clings to and befriends.
Yeah,
because I think they're
the boy.
Yeah, he's a little kid, and they become a group within the group.
But the boy is like what, like a servant boy to the, like, what is the boy's relation to the seer?
They call him an apprentice. Titch is his name.
Apprentice. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's going along. Yeah. And then, yes. What else happens?
Yeah. Well, Danny, so, I think it's important to add the mythology of the Cyclops, who's now following the group.
So the Cyclops makes his appearance, if I'm not mistaken, in the swamp. He saves Ergo, right? Ergo.
Yeah, earlier, Ergo. But prior to going to the...
No, because the seer is with them in the swamp. So they grab the seer. They have to go through the swamp.
The seer is with them in the swamp.
Which, by the way, the swamp is another shortcut, I think. And it's like they have to go through some swamp that nobody wants to go through. But that's, of course, how you get to the place that you have to get to. So they cut through the swamp. And this is a really cool scene that I always liked. Because the slayers just appear, like they come up out of the ground.
Yeah, they're just like.
Blah, blah, blah. I always thought that was super cool. Another huge set, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and and I think the quicksand also takes place in the swamp. Right when they enter the swamp, just like Princess Bride, they encounter quicksand, and quickly, you know, they're smart for being, you know, in a medieval world. They form a human chain, and they get almost everybody out.
Yeah,
but one guy dies, so we lose.
They
our
even
first
touch
guy.
Fingers, but the king is very heroic in that moment and forces everyone to create the human chain, not to be confused with the human cyclops
or a human centipede.
Yes. And he gets it. And we haven't met the cyclops yet, right? Officially,
no, he's not there yet. Because what happens now is they recover from the quicksand, and the slayers show up, and a fight ensues. And like all fights in this movie, it's a terrible fight scene. Like everyone's sloppy sword play. One and done on all the takes.
The fight scenes, yeah.
Right when Ergo and I believe Titch are about to be killed by a slayer, a spear comes hurtling through the swamp at a tremendous speed. It's like not a usual spear. It's got like 3 points to it.
It's a magic three-pointed spear.
A slayer. And lo and behold, who is the savior of Ergo? It is the beautiful Cyclops who's been following them, been stalking them.
And this is my favorite part of the movie. When they meet the Cyclops, so Ergo and the boy are there having a conversation with the Cyclops. And they shake hands. And at that moment, you realize the Cyclops' costume has no way for him to actually see. It's a full-on papier-mâché mask with a weird-looking eye. And he can't see out of it. Because he reaches to shake hands, he misses the hand almost. And they readjust and get the handshake.
I thought about this, Tyson. So go look at this costume.
You might not have any depth perception with just one eye.
Yeah. He can see because he does perform stunts that, and I thought about this after examining closely his face. Rel is the name of the Cyclops. So Rel, the Cyclops, he does a lot of stunts that he has to see, because when he ends up killing the fake wizard or seer, he is running through the forest, jumping logs. And so the Cyclops costume has to allow for him to see. He might not be able to see below him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, but he has some vision.
That was the only moment in the movie where they did a reshoot was the handshake. Probably took him like 700 reshoots to be like, nope, a little higher. Nope, a little lower. Because when they reached in, you saw that they missed and then kind of were like readjusted and got it. And they're like, that's as good as we've gotten in 700 takes. Let's just roll with it.
Well, the Cyclops costume was one of the greatest costumes ever made. I've decided beautiful. I found my new Halloween costume for 2020.
It's so good. The face of the Cyclops is so good. Yeah. And so anyways, yeah, so they realize that the Cyclops is friend, not foe. But the old man Seer and the king have been like, you've been following us for a while now, haven't you, friend? Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yes. So here's the thing.
Wait, Danny, the backstory of the Cyclops, I thought was also super interesting. The Cyclops, they're people, they started with two eyes, but they made a deal with the Beast, right?
Oh, is that true? How did I miss that?
Yes.
Is that real?
I thought they made a deal with the Beast, Tyson, right?
They were supposed to be able to... They chose a power to see into the future.
They traded an eye.
To see into the future, but the only thing they can see is their own death.
So,
would you make that trade, Tyson?
One eye to see my own death?
Yeah.
I mean, I pretty much can already see my own death already.
I think I'm smelling a spinoff. Cyclops Rail spinoff. Sounds like they've got a compelling backstory.
See, Liv
we should examine
was saying
further.
In the chat that the prequel should be about how the glaive got into the lava.
Oh, yeah. Probably a Cyclops dropped it there when he lost his eye and he was like, not a fair trade.
I bet what happened was the demigod Maui tried to steal it and then dropped it as he was trying to get it to the humans.
Now, the door is definitely open for a prequel to crawl.
There is something very important takes place during this battle in the swamp. Mm-hmm. So I think that the slayers are there as a diversionary tactic, because during the fighting, they have to put down the seer who is blind, right? It's ironic. So they put him on a log. Now, this is the scene I was talking about earlier where an identical seer created by the Beast suddenly appears, and it's a great scene, behind the original seer, the real seer. And he creeps up to him and puts his hands on his shoulder neck area, not in a strangulation, and his fingernails grow into the original seer. And then it's like the faces and the noises. It's very disturbing. You're not sure exactly what happened. Maybe you don't want to know what happened.
Right. Yeah.
But then after the fighting ends, they go back to the seer, who is seated on the log as if nothing's taken place. And they're like, hey, let's continue our journey. We're basically there. The seer says, okay, let's go. The prince offers to guide the seer. So the seer puts his hand on the prince's shoulder and he opens his eyes for a minute and they're pure black.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, awesome. Now you know what happened.
So creepy.
Yes.
Now, the evil seer, we'll call him the evil seer, his plans are thwarted when one of the bandits offers to guide the seer. And so, if you remember, he's kind of pissed off because he puts his hand on one of the bandits and is like, I wanted to be touching the prince.
Yeah. It's
anyway,
true.
Here, Danny, I just thought of this now, but I think I can incorporate some of the visuals that you're talking about from the film here onto the. I could do a screen share and incorporate some visuals for people that are.
This is one of the best visuals.
Yeah.
Other than the Cyclops.
The Cyclops costume is hands down the best part of the film with that handshake.
Yeah. Okay. So here is the.
That's when he's dying.
Yeah.
Yeah. I found this as a child. So disturbing. Look at his eyes. I mean, just looking at old people is always disturbing, but to see one being murdered by this is an
by
orgasmic
himself.
Experience for the Beast clone. The evil clone.
Oh my god.
Yeah, go to the part where he's creeping up behind. it looks like it's very you're so close. Right there.
Right there.
Right there. Yeah. Look at this. This is the evil seer, the clone seer.
Yeah. He's just we're gonna walk.
He up. Just walks the same.
Yeah.
And then that's what's crazy. He doesn't like run up and be like,
I'm
gonna get
him.
Shot
right here. All I thought was so cool. I mean, remember, this is the 80s. This is
83, and Star Wars had done things way more impressive than this, and then everybody else kind of...
And he says, Titch, is that you? Thinking that it's his apprentice about to guide him.
Yeah.
And oh boy, dude, it is not Titch.
Yeah.
Oh,
no.
He opens his eyes.
Black
the clone
eyes.
Opens his eyes.
Here goes the fingernails.
Yeah,
look at the fingernails.
Ah,
dude. Look at them. And then it's like, I can't tell if he's enjoying it or, he's not enjoying it. Look at that face. It's like he's taking the most painful dump ever. Oh,
we even saw a little bit of the Cyclops there.
Well, here, let's see if we can get, here's the Cyclops also.
This is the handshake.
This is Danny Halloween costume 2020.
This is the handshake. I don't think he can see very well.
Yeah.
Oh, we are going to get the handshake here.
Yeah, the handshake comes.
It's a little bit of a blunder.
Yeah.
Oh, right there. You missed it by like 10 seconds.
Oh, here we go.
Here it is.
Okay, so Cyclops is going to shake hands with our lead. Yeah, a little bit of
kind
a
of.
Bit
of a, yeah.
It's not that big of a mistake. I've done a bad handshake like that before.
Yeah, but that's still like, you can still be like, the Cyclops can't see very well.
Yeah.
All right.
Let's watch the handshake one more time.
Okay. One more shot. Here we go. Cyclops, can you see the hand?
Can you see the head? Not very well.
That's like me shaking hands as a teenager with adults.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And maybe that was it was. Like, because Cyclopses are solitary beings, and maybe he hasn't had much handshaking experience. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So now the evil imposter seer is guiding them to the emerald whatever. They don't know that. They don't know that. But the evil seer comes up with a plan to get the prince alone. Says, only the prince can take me the rest of the way, which is classic. Yeah. Like, they never classic. Go alone.
Yeah.
So they start to go, and the minute they lose sight of the group, the fingernails start to grow out. Now, what's happening simultaneously is the Cyclops had stayed back for some reason I don't recall.
I recall.
Why did he stay back?
He had to stay back because that was... Oh, that wasn't as far as he was going.
No, okay.
No, no.
He found the old seer.
Well, what I'm saying is
why did he stay back at the swamp?
Maybe he's just protecting their rear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like more seer. So anyways, as he's sitting there on a log, the original seer emerges from the swamp. And
the body,
the Cyclops realizes that an imposter has taken the place of the original seer, and he sprints through the forest while holding his awesome spear. And this is why I think he can see through that mask, because he's doing some amazing. I mean, this guy's got to be top of his class stunt man. You know what I mean? He's just running through this forest, and right as the evil seer is digging those, what I'm guessing are poisonous fingernails, into the neck of the prince, he does this like 500 yard spear chuck right through the forest. Perfect. Hits the evil seer in the back. The alien inside the seer pops out and goes into the dirt.
Yeah,
it's a very moving part of the film.
very much so.
But they've got a problem, because now they don't know how to locate the fortress. So that was a big part of it, because remember, it changes place. It changes its place every day. So where is the Black Fortress going to be? There's only one way to find out, but it's even more dangerous than what they just went through.
Yeah.
They have to go visit the Widow in the Web, who is obviously some kind of witch, I'm guessing.
Yes. Yeah. And also spider-esque.
Okay, now this is another great part, that the minute it came up on the screen, I was transported 30 years ago to watching this movie, because this part made a big impression on me. I think it's actually kind of a cool little side story.
Yeah.
And the Widow in the Web? Yeah, the Widow in the Web.
Before we get to the Widow in the Web, we're going to stop down, and we have a little bit of a sabbatical to Liam Neeson's what would you call that? That his concubine hideout?
So now we're at the concubine hideout on their way to the Widow in the Web.
Yeah.
So they're all hungry. And one of the
harem going on here for Liam Neeson.
One of the members of the bandit group was like, hey, Liam, doesn't one of your wives live around here? And he's like, oh, yeah, for sure. And anyway, like I said, he recruits her to make some food. I think bring some prostitutes. And one of these women that shows up in camp has a thing for the prince. I mean,
this is Liam Neeson with one of his wives. They're very happy
just
to see
one.
Him.
So this woman brings some food to the prince, and you don't know.
First of all, Liam says, oh, who's this girl, to his wife there. And his wife says, oh, it's just some girl that we saved and brought with us. Like, they don't know.
They do actually have a discussion about
her. They have a little backstory about her, whereas she's just like was rescued with some other, and they didn't know her, but she was brought along.
So she's now with the group and she's serving the prince some food and she's being very
flirtatious.
Mm-hmm. Flirtatious. Yeah. Now the Beast, we don't know, he's wearing
tight pants.
He is. And
I can't blame her.
That's sending the wrong message to her.
Yes.
But the Beast is using this lady in the camp as a double agent. And he's got the princess. By the way, this whole time that we're talking about, the princess is trapped in the Black Fortress. And she's running around, seemingly not making any sense of where she is. And again, these sets are huge. Mm-hmm. Giant eyeballs. Remember, she runs into the center of a giant eye. I mean, it's just these massive sets. The Beast is like, you can never leave. You must marry me. And mm-hmm. this is where you find out that the Beast is trying to marry the princess.
Yes.
And that seems super strange, mm-hmm. right? He wants to have the child that rules the galaxy, which is weird because the Beast already kind of seems to rule
powerful.
Everything.
Yeah.
He's already very powerful. He doesn't need the, some peasant woman from Kroll. He's already got all the power he needs. Anyway, she's running around. She's trying to escape. And the Beast corners her and says, your prince doesn't love you. And yes. he kind of allows them to see this flirtatious exchange between the prince and this double agent that the Beast has got in camp.
This was entrapment. I have to say, Tyson, I thought this was such a dick move by the Beast here.
Because it really was.
He really does. He sets this trap for the prince that he sends this woman to go and come on to him. And then he's like, at the same exact moment, it's basically like, hey, let's FaceTime and see what your boyfriend is doing right at this exact second. Mm-hmm. And then it just happens to be the exact moment that this woman is hugging him and saying like, oh, I'll be the new princess.
It's like Cheaters, Beast style.
Would you like to see what your prince is doing right at this second?
Would you like to see your boyfriend's done with this woman we're paying to be very flirtatious and aggressive with him? Just not right.
Yeah, it wasn't right. It wasn't right. He's
the Beast crossed the line.
And he's also catfishing right now as the prince. He's taken the form of the prince and
that's
saying,
right.
And here's what the real prince is doing. So this is a lot going on.
Yeah, the Beast shows that he could take any form he wants. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but
any
most
form
of the time,
the princess wants him to be.
Yeah, most of the time he's swamp monster form.
Yeah,
giant
but
swamp
he can
monster.
Take the prince's form if she so desires.
Yes.
Anyway, what's cruel is that this double agent just kind of gets thrown onto the garbage heap by the Beast when she fails at her attempt to seduce the prince.
Well, she has two objectives. The objective one is to seduce the prince, and if she can't seduce the prince, she's supposed to kill him.
But she can't kill him.
Can't do either because
he's too hot.
The Beast's power is already waning.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so the Beast kills her right there in front of everyone, FaceTiming the whole thing to the princess, which, by the way, if you're trying to earn the heart of the princess, I mean, that's not something you want to show her.
Yeah, that's not the best way.
The Beast is no Casanova, you know?
Yeah,
no, he doesn't
know what to do.
He doesn't know the language of love.
Mm-hmm.
Not at all. Not like the prince and princess now.
You know, he's like one of these guys, like he shows up with flowers for the princess. And she's like, oh, no, well, I already have a boyfriend. He's like, well, screw you then.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I never liked you either. Yeah.
Like, wait, I thought you wanted to date me. No.
No, I didn't. You smell bad.
You're ugly. Wait, what? You wanted to date me a minute ago.
All right, should we move on?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, let's go to the Widow of the Weber. But this is where the prophet Anir, who's been with us, the wizened old man with the beard, he has to go visit the Widow in the Web. And what you find out is that another cave, and I love caves in these stories.
Yeah.
And in this cave is an elaborate set of webs.
Yes.
And at the center of a web, it looks like a spider's nest. And inside that is the Widow of the Web. And what you find out is that to get to the Widow in the Web, where she can give you a prophecy, you have to cross through the spider web. Mm-hmm. And the spider comes out. And this is the same person, I think, who did... I read about this. I want to say he did Jason and the Argonauts. The same stop animation guy. Anyway, the spider comes out onto the web. And Anir, so slow. Like, these scenes, and they're meant to be this way, he is going so slow to get to the center of the web. And the spider...
He's old. And
he is old, but it's like
it's
he's
a spider's web.
He spends too much time looking around, you know, like you just need to stay focused on that egg thing in the middle and you just need to go. Now, the window on the web,
the whole strategy for getting past.
Again, I see the spider come out. I go back out the cave. There's no prophecy worth a giant, giant spider.
Danny,
huge.
Can you explain though, is the spider trapping the widow in the web? Is the widow in the web married to the spider now? Is their son?
No, the widow in the web is there. It's punishment for her, remember, killing the son that we're going to find out. Spoiler alert.
Yeah, this got a little dark.
Yeah. So this is her punishment. She lives in the middle of that web. Now, she has the power to stop the spider, but she can only do it once. So most people will go into the web and get a prophecy, but she can't stop the spider from getting you when you go back out. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing about the widow in the web. So Ynir goes super slow and he yells her name, and it's her original name, and she recognizes him. So she turns this giant, what do they call those? Hourglass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that'll put the spider on pause. She can only turn it once, though. So that's the only pause you get.
In the movie, did you read the book, Danny?
No. So the spider is sitting there, like, in stop animation version of pause. And Ynir still is going so slow. Like, a young, healthy male like the prince, he could have gone up during the whole pause, spider pause, gotten the prophecy, and come back.
Yes.
But because they chose an old man for this... it just backfires. So he gets to the widow in the web in the middle at the little egg sack, right as the spider gets unpaused. Now the spider can't go inside the egg sack, so he's safe. And he sits down, and what we find out is that these two have a history. That Ynir and the widow in the web were lovers at some point. Mm-hmm. She was super hot, and for some reason he hallucinates her as being super hot whenever he sees her.
Yeah. Because that's what true love is.
Is that what you got from that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, is that you always have eyes and always see your significant other as their most attractive selves. Because that's how they always are to you, right?
Yeah, I guess. But even after she reveals to Ynir that she was so mad when he left that she killed his baby, which he didn't know that he had, he still says that he loves her. Like, he's not even that mad about the whole
thing. Yeah, but he's trying to get out of the web, too. So maybe there's some strategery, too.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
So anyway,
can I ask, what does the widow in the web do all day? She just sits in that egg sack all day.
Eats bugs.
What does she eat?
Probably.
Yeah.
I bet bugs. The spider brings her stuff.
The spider
that's what
stuff.
I'm thinking, too.
Yeah, I mean, that's got to be the only way. Like,
does the web have its own nutrients?
Maybe. It's like a giant spider IV.
So that's like her jail?
Yeah, it's her jail.
Was she always able to see the future? When did she get this power?
I think she was always something of a wizard or witch.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like that was kind of like their thing as a couple. Lovemaking between these two was just fireworks all the time.
Did she know that Ynir would leave her?
No, obviously she should have used her little crystal ball to see that happening. Mm-hmm. Then she would have been half as mad.
Did she know that she would kill her son?
Yeah, she's really not very good at seeing the future, but she can tell you where the Black Fortress is going to be, and that's what she does. She's like, it's going to be in the fields of blah, blah, blah tomorrow morning.
Yes.
And so Ynir's like, thanks, but how do I get out?
Yes.
And then
she's going to we're going to see the younger version of the widow in the web also.
Yeah, super hot.
Mm-hmm.
Now she says, the only way to get out of here is I have to smash the hourglass. You have to hold the sand in your hand. And as long as you can hold that sand in your hand, you'll live. You'll be safe. But the sand is trickling out all the time. So, what you see next is Ynir is fleeing with the sand in his hand and he's being super clumsy. If I was holding what remained of my life as sand in my hand, he is like spilling it all over the place.
But he has to get through an obstacle course.
I know it would make great for like a gladiators reality type of show. Like, anyway, he's holding this sand, spilling it all over the place. The spider can't touch him. Spider gets super mad, goes back and kills the widow in the web. He runs down to camp holding the sand, spilling it all over the place. This is his life this is basically his life in his hands. And right as he gets to camp, yells where the Black Fortress is going to be as the last grains of sand fall from his hand, and he collapses and dies. Yeah. So
Tyson, my kids had a lot of questions during this part of like, Dad, what is in his hand? Why is he dying? I was like, I don't know. I don't really. I wish I knew, but
it's the sands of time.
Like, oh, Dad, is that blood? I'm like, I don't know.
Sand.
Yeah.
Sands of time for his life.
Sands of time.
Make sure they listen to this section of the podcast.
Yeah, he's just about to die.
So the problem is that the Black Fortress is going to appear so freaking far away. And remember, we are living in a pre-industrialized society here on Krull. So horse travel. No one travels faster than a horse. But Tyson, what do they have?
Fire horses. Fire horses. Yeah.
This scene, the following scene of fire horses and rounding up the fire horses, also made a big impact on me.
Yes.
As a child.
What was the impact?
First of all, they round up these horses in what appears to be an incredibly dangerous shot. These actors are in the midst of what appeared to be very agitated horses. And I always feel like one of them is going to get trampled. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys felt that way. Like, they're jumping off rocks. The horses are jumping off rocks. They're in an enclosed space. These horses are huge. They end up lassoing enough horses for everyone. But the Cyclops has to stay behind.
Tyson, yet these horses did not seem very fast as they are attempting to wrangle them. They appear only to get to fire speeds when someone is riding them.
Yeah, as soon as you dig your spurs into their sides, they will hit fire speed and maintain fire speed all through the night.
Yes.
Dude.
Yeah.
All through the night.
And if this was real life, those horses would have been setting fire to the countryside for 1,000 leagues. I mean, those feet, they go through a field. And I think this is what stuck with me. I'm so surprised the field doesn't burst into flame.
Mm-hmm.
The fire horses are just setting everything on fire.
Yeah.
Jumping huge distances. Like, they can, at first I'm like, can they fly? Cause they're running really fast and fire shooting out. But then you find out these horses can fly.
They can kind of defy gravity. I mean, it's almost like, in the way that like E.T. is able to like levitate the bicycle. They appear to, I don't know what the actual specific gravity is on the planet Krull, but these horses, that they seem to just, they reach enough of a velocity and they are able to just seemingly defy the laws of physics.
Yeah. So they defy the laws of physics all the way to the Black Fortress, and they get there just in time.
By the way,
the sun,
Danny,
is about to come out.
I do think that the producers of Krull may have been a little overly ambitious with the green screen that they attempted to go with, because there's a lot of shots of like with like the countryside flying by that I do not believe were real.
You're viewing it through your modern CGI saturated lens. Okay.
Yeah.
You've seen some amazing things. You've seen things, Rob, that you can't even tell are fantasy. All right. This is 1983. What we're seeing here is some of the finest work. I mean, it's amazing what had been done. If you were a 10-year-old child, or however old I was when I first watched this is mind blowing. As far as I was concerned, when I walked away from this movie, there are horses on a planet Krull. They can defy gravity and shoot fire out of their hooves. Okay. All right.
Fine.
I mean, you got to appreciate it for what it was.
Yeah.
Back then. So anyway, they get to the Black Fortress.
Hold on, your microphone's off.
I was going to say, once they carry their momentum off the cliff, their aerodynamics, I don't know if you know how that works, slips underneath their chest and lifts them.
Yeah.
And so it's only because they're going so fast. It's like a Ferrari. If a Ferrari went 400 miles an hour, it would fly. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And as a wise man once said, I would rebuttal, that's not flying. That's falling with style.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. They get to the Black Fortress. Let's wrap this up real quick. And nothing's ever easy, but supposedly getting into the Black Fortress is fairly easy. Because there's only like 5 people guarding. And by the way, they could have never opened any of those doors to defend the Black Fortress. And all those people would have been, I'm guessing, killed when the Black Fortress disappeared.
Yeah.
So our group of heroes start to climb the Black Fortress. And as they're climbing, some doors open up and some slayers.
Just out of the rock. They're not out of the real rock. Doors, right?
Yeah. They come out and they start shooting layers. Now, all of a sudden, the slayers have unlimited lasers. Up until this point, every slayer could shoot one laser and then had to fight with a sword. But these guys are shooting lasers nonstop.
Yeah.
And they're deadly accurate. They've got our heroes pinned down behind the rocks. They're not going anywhere. When who should appear to save the day? Tyson's best friend, Rel, the Cyclops.
Yeah.
He shows up on a fiery horse. And by the way, he's getting shot by lasers. Not even a problem for the Cyclops, which, I mean, we could have used that throughout the whole movie. Anyway, he's blocking laser shots. Everyone's behind him. He gets to the door. The door's closing because the sun's coming up. He's going to hold the door open for them. They're all getting through. They always take way too long. Poor Rel is getting crushed. And again, this really stuck with me as a child. Rel gets squashed by the door, crushed, and they show the whole thing. I mean, it's pretty gruesome.
So he dies, Danny.
He died. He is being crushed.
A little unclear for me. No,
how is it unclear? He's in like a 5-inch space. All you can see is his sad Cyclops
so
eye.
Danny, now a couple things here that if I may, Game of Thrones spoilers incoming. Okay. So click out if you have not seen Game of Thrones here. But did George R.R. Martin blatantly rip off the Hodor story from this, the Cyclops going into holding the door here in Crawl? And not only that, on top of that, the Cyclops knows his own fate. The Cyclops can see one thing, can see into the future, knows how he's going to die.
No,
does
you're
it
wrong.
Anyway,
because
like the same exact thing as Hodor.
That's wrong, Rob.
Why?
The Cyclops was supposed to die in the desert where they caught the horses. And that's why he stayed, because that was his time. And then they said, well, what if he betrays that fate? And they said, then he dies very painfully.
Oh.
But if he accepts his fate, he's going to just like, you know, slip into sweet slumber or whatever. But if he doesn't, then he will get whatever. Okay. It's an excruciating amount of pain. So
yes,
what I'm understanding is that the Cyclops is in the desert waiting for his fate. And then he's like, you know what?
F it.
I'm going to save those people. I'm going to ride or die as long as I can with them. Maybe I can make a change to this world and the universe and sacrifice myself. And even if I can't see through this godforsaken mask, I'm going to do my best to help my crew.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You ride or die. He
everybody's already in. It seems like that he could just like easily like slip in at this point.
No, I don't know the physics of stone doors on magic mountains.
Yeah. Okay. Was it spring loaded? Like it was going to snap if he let it go? That's what we don't know. And that we have to assume that.
I'm going to assume that. So he's going to lose a limb at the very least.
Mm-hmm.
Because you don't shut a door like that without. I mean, he doesn't have the cat like reflexes, especially with that Cyclops eye and no peripheral vision to just boom, pop out of the door. Bam, it shuts.
Yeah.
Now he was done. Plus, this is the thing. When people are holding doors in movies, the people going through the doors appear to take their time.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, hey, no rush. This guy's being crushed slowly. You know, just take your time crawling through his legs. But, you know, so ends Rel the Cyclops.
Yes.
And it's a very sad ending.
Danny, I do think a big theme of Crawl is the idea of noble sacrifice. There is a lot of members of this band of men that come together to save the princess. And there are many noble sacrifices made along the way.
And right now we're to the point where one of our favorite actors is about to be sacrificed. Now, you would think that a big headlining star like Liam Neeson isn't going to die. But right after Rel holds the door open for him, Liam runs right into laser fire and takes one and goes down. So he's out of the game. So ends, Liam Neeson's role in Krull. He's down. He dies. The death is a big moment for him and the leader of the bandits. Mm-hmm. I guess they were best friends. Mm-hmm. So now they're in the fortress, which is huge. I don't even know if you're someone who breaks into the Black Fortress, how you find anything. I mean,
it's like
hard.
The Death Star, though.
Yeah, they I know. They had like some schematics of the Black Fortress.
I'm going to assume, for the sake of the plot, that true love finds a way, right? And that he could sense where the princess was.
Well, and he has the glaive still. Are we forgetting about the glaive? Maybe the glaive is guiding him.
The glaive heats right. up Tyson or like vibrates as you get closer.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That's a good point, Tyson, about the glaive. Let's assume the glaive is the guide. Mm-hmm. Because you're not going to find anything in the Black Fortress. I bet most of the Slayers don't even know where they are. They can't find the bathroom. Now, they're in the fortress. They start to run through the hallways, and the floor opens up, which was also a cool scene. And it opens up in a crack, and the people fall down. Not even that deep.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it's just like another room that's almost bigger and nicer than the hallway.
It was like a Tupperware, and it's like the lid opened, and then it was going to then close back down.
So you think they made a giant, they had Rubbermaid make a giant Tupperware.
Yeah. It opens up, that some people fall in, the group gets separated. Great move, by the way, if you're the Beast, because that's the first thing.
Advantage Beast.
You got to divide and conquer. So he splits up the group. Ergo, and the Titch end up in a different place. The head of the bandit guy ends up, and the prince decides he's going to just run off and do this solo. He's got this, right? With the glaive on by his side, he could do this. Thank you for getting me this far, guys. Screw you. I'm off on my own solo mission. So he breaks off to go fight the Beast. Ergo is trapped with Titch. And the bandit and two other guys, they just wander into a spear-filled room.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's like a dead end that starts to close in, just like Star Wars, except for giant spears begin to protrude. One of the guys in the bandit group drops a knife, which if you're in a room that is closing and it has spears coming out and it stops.
Yeah.
Like, count your blessings.
He drops the knife and it stops.
He decides when it stops, now would be a good time to go back and retrieve this knife that I dropped. And no one stops him. I'd be like, no, dude, don't move. Mm-hmm. Don't move. No, I think he takes a spear, a wall spear, super slowly, by the way, super slow, right into, it looks like his back at first.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell if it was back.
And
I
if think you notice, the spears are very rubbery. And they're so the dull. Other two guys are guiding the soft spears to make it look like they're jabbing into him.
Yeah.
So they're like, oh, I'm going to have one close to my throat. And you can see him like actually like manipulating.
I noticed that. I mean, they're really manhandling those spears.
Yeah.
But the one guy takes it right in the back. Yeah. And
these guys died for no reason.
Yeah, they just ran into a cul-de-sac and got speared.
Yeah.
Ergo and Titch, Ergo turns into a lion.
A
tiger to defend Titch against some slayers and does a great job. But let's go back to the prince who locates a dome and somehow knows that inside that dome is the princess. Mm-hmm. So now, after fighting all this time, now is the moment when he is going to take out the glaive and use it to defeat the Beast. All this time, no, he didn't need it when they were trying to get into the fortress. That would have been a great time to use it. Instead, he sacrificed the Cyclops. So now he takes out the glaive. Boom, the bejeweled glaive pops out the blades. And what you find out is that the glaive doesn't possess lasers. It is like a throwing star that can spin endlessly and cut anything.
And if you hold out your hand, that seems to be what controls it and move it around a little bit.
Yeah, it's
but
a throwing star.
It kind of has a mind of its own.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It knows what to kill and what to destroy and when to come back and when to just hover.
So the glaive spins like crazy
like
and starts cutting.
It's like a saw just like flying through the air.
Yeah.
Like it's something that the glaive is something any of us could go to Home Depot and buy right now. Like, it's probably seemed really cool back then. Like, if you went back in time with a circular saw in the medieval times and showed it to people, they'd be blown away. But for us, we're like, we've got a glaive. Most people have a glaive in their garage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I actually imagined, the guy who made the glaive and designed the glaive and him being pumped. And then everybody being pumped around him and being like, that is they're like, we need a mythical weapon that's like, kind of cool. And the dude's like, I know what you want. And shows up with this thing. And he's like, that's not all. Has blades come out, but we're going to not, awesome.
This is the movie prop that sold 1,000 throwing stars, because I bought a lot of throwing stars out of this movie. So many. I threw them at my wall and then put a poster over all the holes.
Because you wanted the glaive.
Because I wanted the glaive. They never returned to me. I've never even gotten a boomerang to return to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let alone a throwing star.
So the glaive cuts open the dome, and inside is the princess. And the beast, during all this commotion, is asleep. Apparently asleep. Behind some glass chamber. Yeah. Which, by the way, terrible leadership. As a general, mm-hmm. the beast has fallen asleep at the will or the switch. He's had all this fighting. He's got intruders inside the Black Fortress, and he's sleeping. Mm-hmm. So they start to slowly creep out the dome, and they look back to where the beast was sleeping, which, by the way, the beast is a swamp monster, mm-hmm. Always distorted by some kind of filter.
Yeah.
And the beast is gone. You know, it's one of those oh shiz moments.
Yeah.
Like, where is the beast? Run. They start to run. The beast emerges. He smashes, you know, like he's breaking his own house down to make a scene. And now the glaive fights the beast. Mm-hmm. And it actually doesn't take very, the beast can shoot fireballs out of his mouth. He's like got a flamethrower. That's his power. He's got a flamethrower.
One of his powers.
Yeah. All of his other people have lasers, but he's a flamethrower out of his mouth. A fight ensues, and let's just say that the glaive lands a killing blow in the beast's chest.
Mm-hmm. What we think is a killing blow.
That's right. The beast collapses to the ground. The prince and princess begin to run away. Oh, wait, no, sorry. They try to retrieve the glaive using what Tyson was describing earlier. The force. Mm-hmm. It is so the force.
Yeah.
But the glaive is stuck, dude. It went right into the sternum. Like classic. Yeah. Can't get it out. They consider they're going to go up and they're going to get it out of the corpse of the beast. And that's when it reawakens, right?
Yes.
Right then, when they're looking at it, the beast rises. The glaive is stuck. The glaive can't be retrieved. They start to run away.
No
the
glaive.
Beast follows.
No glaive now.
No glaive, dude. You can't, without the glaive, there's nothing. But true love finds a way. And what they discover is that supposedly the prince has had a flamethrower in his hands. This whole time.
Yeah.
Or had the ability, because the princess...
Yeah, this goes back to the wedding ceremony where they had the fire and water, and is this a property of the indigenous people of Krull, or does this have to do with the prophecy of him being the prince and her being
the princess? We don't know, but the princess, at a moment when everything appears to be lost, the beast is hovering over them, shooting flames out of his mouth. She hands him fire. They finish the wedding ceremony, and all of a sudden, the prince now has flamethrower hands,
mm-hmm.
which would be awesome to have. And he begins to fight the beast. Now, they've spent, up to this point at this movie, they've probably spent millions on these sets, these dramatic sets. But when it came to the beast itself, they must have really scrimped, because the beast looks awful. Again, it's like a rubbery swamp monster from the 50s. And
through a distorted lens.
Through a distorted lens, so you can't see all the problems.
I think that the glaive was like the feather in Dumbo. Where he didn't ever need the glaive, but he needed the glaive to boost his confidence, to realize his inner strength.
Yeah. So you're saying that he could have just with the flamethrower, although did he get the flame from Princess Lyssa? Did they need to be together?
Maybe? I think together. You're right. They had to be together. So he hasn't had flamethrower hands only up to right now. He's got flamethrower hands, and he puts them to good use, and he flamethrowers the crap out of the beast. Now the beast has flamethrower mouth, but as we all know, flamethrower mouth does not even, it doesn't.
One mouth, two hands.
Two hands, dude. So they're they toast the beast. And then remember, they have to get out of that castle now because things are falling apart. Whenever you kill the end guy,
the castle crumbles.
Castle always crumbles because for some reason those two things are tied. Mm-hmm. So now begins the scene of locating everybody who's still alive in the ragtag group and getting them safely out into a field. And that's what they do. They struggle. They run. Everything's collapsing. It's a near thing. They get out into this field, and the Black Fortress is taken back up into space one piece at a time. And something that bothered me at the very end is that they don't know really where they are. I mean, they're in the middle of nowhere, but they're all so happy. They just get up and they just start walking.
Yeah,
but where are they going?
Yeah, did the Black Fortress
Fire move horses.
Again during the night? Did they?
Yes, it moved. It moved while they were in it.
Yeah,
yeah.
But so it moved near their house.
Oh, yeah. How convenient would that be?
Yeah,
it's like, so dude, right around the house. Liam Neeson's got another wife.
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
Perfect, dude. Just wife Liam's, number five.
But yeah. Liam's dead, right?
Yeah, so you won't have that in. But the Bandit King, or the guy who's head of the bandits, he probably knows most of Liam's wives.
Yeah,
yeah.
So are these the only people that made it out of the four? We got down to the six of the prince, the princess, the kid, Ergo, and then two of the bandits. That's it?
Two of the bandits. Yep. That's it.
The most wholesome bandit, and then the leader of the bandits, who was pretty smarmy.
Yeah.
Yeah, the most wholesome bandit, the very first bandit to join the group. And one of the final scenes is he unlocks the chains or the wrist cuffs that were once handcuffs of this bandit. He should have done that.
Way
like,
earlier.
How much better of a fighter would the bandit have been without these giant iron hand, you know, cuffs on the whole time? Because it was obviously...
you can use those as shields.
That's true. It was a broken handcuffs, to give you an idea. They weren't, you know, they weren't connected or anything, but they were still there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they could have deflected some blows. So thus ends the Reign of the Beast. We're going to assume that the prince and princess go off and they... Well, now he's a king. King and queen go off. They have a kid. And somehow that kid rules the galaxy on a horse.
But that doesn't happen in the movie. That's,
no, it doesn't happen. But this is what we're assuming. That's the prophecy.
But again, you know, you don't know. Maybe they got divorced.
Yeah.
maybe after going into the Black Fortress, he's
that's why you think they never did a
all the toxic gas
because they got divorced shortly after.
Well, I think the reason why they never did a sequel was that this movie lost a lot of money at the box office, Tyson. This movie.
Yeah, let's finish by reading some of the
stats,
the reviews that came out.
Before we get to reviews, let me give you some stats. This movie cost $27 to $30 million to make, and brought in $16.9 million at the box office.
Wow,
dude, 27 to 30 million. Quibi's putting out 10-minute shows at that price right now.
Mm-hmm.
That is crazy, dude. Mm-hmm. In 1983. That means that by today's standards, it would be $64 trillion
yes.
to make this
Can
movie.
We read my favorite review of Kroll at the time? Yes. I'm assuming this was done at the time. And it says, Kroll, it is a hot, hollow wind, which only reminds us of what a pleasant breeze feels like and angers us because it isn't one. Sting. That's got a sting.
Yeah, I thought you were saying that Sting was the one who wrote that review.
No, Sting was in another movie, I think. Dune. This is probably similar
Dune. But they're redoing Dune, right?
Yeah, with Timothy, however you say
Chalamet.
His last name. Chalamet.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Another review, one of the most boring, this is from Roger Ebert and Gene Siskel, one of the most boring, nonsensical, illogical fantasies in a long time.
Okay. And that is a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Kroll.
Now you don't have to see it. We basically took as much time as the movie takes to tell you about the movie. So in the time you've listened to us talk about it, you could have watched it and come up with your own opinions.
This was free.
Yeah.
And also that you could listen to the audio of this and you could multitask. So this was so much fun.
Yeah, it was great. And thank you, Danny, for introducing us to Kroll so many months, maybe years ago. And now we finally all got to watch it.
Every time I recommend something to people, I get really worried and I go back and watch it. That's why I watched it the day we brought up the idea of doing a whole podcast on it, because I watch it thinking, do I want other people seeing this and thinking that this is something
judging
I like?
You.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I got to say,
you do like it.
The first half of the movie, I was like, oh, man. This is not going to reflect well on 10-year-old me.
Yes.
But by the end, I was like, no, this is good.
Tyson, what is your crawl?
Strange brew.
Strange brew. Okay.
Have you seen Strange Brew?
I have not.
What?
No.
Wow.
That's such a good. That is another movie of my youth, right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I remember there was a time where I was watching Strange Brew almost every day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's a good one. Maybe we should do that one next. Give it some time and do another Strange Brew review.
Yes. Oh, I love this. This was so much fun today. Danny, prequel for Krull or complete reboot?
No, I say prequel following the Cyclops people and their promise with the Beast.
Oh, that's smart. Yeah. And Rob, you never told us what your Krull is.
I'm trying to think of what my Krull is. I'm trying to think of a movie that is from the this period of time that I've seen many times. Boy, I'm trying to think of something that's just not super mainstream that I could talk about. I don't know if I have it off the top of my head.
Think about it.
Fine.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah. I'm trying to think of something that would be obscure.
Yeah. I don't know if Strange Brew is obscure enough, but that's what I watch.
I think it is.
Or The Jerk. I watch The Jerk quite a bit too.
Yeah.
So.
Well, this was great. Next week we will get back to the traditional fare here of News AF, back to the News AF that you know and love. We are 2 weeks away from News AF 250.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Can you believe that, Danny? That means five.
Dude, I'm gonna bench 250 pounds.
It's just for News AF 250.
Will you post it on your story? We should all try and be able to bench 250 pounds.
There's no way any of us
can
bench 250.
But Danny, you could squat 250, right?
I don't know. That is so much weight.
I bet, guys, we all have the power within us to bench 250, but if we don't realize that power, then we won't be.
I'm going to summon my inner Cyclops, and I am going to put up 250. I'd even have to tear all my pectoral muscles to do so.
Okay. All right. Danny, well, this was so much fun. What do you have going on Mediocre Amateur? Will you be recreating a shot-for-shot remake of Krull sometime soon?
Actually,
the client.
That part where he's in Italy, I thought, what if this is what sparked my interest in mountains
climbing
and Mediocre Amateur? Because that's exactly what I film, basically, for every episode of Mediocre Amateur. So maybe if I can get out there, if things open up, I will go to Italy and recreate the famous glaive scene.
Will you do it in dress boots and tights?
I will have Liz make me those exact tights. Too dangerous to do it in boots. I mean, they were willing to risk the life of their top actor for that. But
isn't that crazy that they put him in those boots for those scenes?
So yeah, that's what I'll do, Rob. Mediocre Amateur Krull style.
Yes, a remake. Okay. And looking Tyson, forward. What do you have going on that you could talk about?
Oh, I got some top secret stuff I can't talk about, but I also am going to be in Branson, Missouri, July 31st to August 2nd at a pickleball tournament.
Whoa.
So yeah, it's all coming together. And then stay tuned. I've got some more stuff in the works coming up. But right now, it's still in the works.
Okay. All right. So in the meantime, follow Tyson Apostle on Insta, on Twitter.
TikTok.
Yes. I made a TikTok music video the other day.
I saw it.
Yes.
With your family?
Yes. That everybody had fun.
Yeah, it looked fun.
Yeah, that's what we did on the 4th of July. So that's the most exciting thing we have going on these days.
Yeah. Is Mediocre Amateur going to get on TikTok too and recreate Rob's music video?
I can barely handle it's too much. Too much everything.
Okay. Well, teach their own, I guess.
All right. So we'll be back next week with more News AF. Until then, take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.
We did it, guys.